You're listening to Raphael Epstein.
And just so you know, some of you are you're getting in early. We're asking for nostalgia, the movie that made you feel like a kid again, and somebody's already texted in. Nothing takes me back to my first cinema movie quite like Bad Boy Bubby. Josh Nelson is here. Filmology.com with a PH. Josh, I want to talk about Guardians of the Galaxy, I have to say. I've seen the trailer. I'm excited. But before we play the trailer, explain, give people a bit of an idea of the basics so they know what they're hearing.
Okay, so this is part of the ever-expanding Marvel-verse. In this, the first of what I'm sure will be another long-standing franchise, we basically have a sort of a Star Wars setup, a ragtag bunch of scavengers, bounty hunters, warriors who are inadvertently thrown together. And I think in the scene that we're about to hear a bit of, they find themselves in a prison and then they have to come together to save the galaxy.
Of course, because they're the Guardians. Have a listen.
Peter Jason Quill. He's also known as Star-Lord.
Who calls him that?
Himself, mostly. He's wanted largely on charges of minor assault, public intoxication, and fraud.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know how this machine worked.
They call themselves the Guardians of the Galaxy.
What a bunch of a-holes.
And yep, using the same track. Once a comic movie starts stealing the soundtrack from Quentin Tarantino, who's stolen the soundtrack from the 70s, you know that pop is finally eating itself. Do I need to know more about the plot? Tell me about the film.
Prepare for a gush fest, I think, is probably the best way of setting this one up. So I saw this a week ago, and it's a film I wanted to walk out of the cinema and walk back into it again and see it straight away. Okay, so a bit more of the backstory, I guess, of the film. And look, this, in terms of the Marvel-verse, this is not one of the more well-known franchises.
No, it's obscure, isn't it?
I think they had some appearances, the Guardians of the Galaxy, in some 60s comics, but it wasn't really until the 80s or 90s that they started to get a run on their own turf. And I think in many ways that plays to the film's strengths, because I get the sense that the studio is giving them a bit more leeway in terms of playing with the script and playing with the tone and the characters are here. So in terms of the Guardians themselves, you have Chris Pratt, the ever-wonderful Chris Pratt, who stars as Star-Lord. We have Zoe Saldana, who's a sort of a vigilante-type alien.
Out of Avatar.
Out of Avatar.
Chris Pratt, Lego Movie.
The Lego Movie. Yeah, I should come back to that in just a moment. We have Groot, a tree sort of creature, voiced by Vin Diesel. We have a genetically modified raccoon, voiced by Bradley Cooper.
And we have Bradley Cooper.
And we have Dave Bautista. If you can remember back in the old wrestling days, Bautista is playing Drax the Destroyer, another vengeful alien. So this is a kind of a ragtag bunch. Look, there's so much that this film gets right. And I think a lot of it comes down to the script. It was co-written by the director, James Gunn. And actually the first screenwriter we've had, co-female screenwriters for the Marvel series. So finally, there's a bit of gender.
Marvel catches up with the 20th century.
A bit of gender balance here. But what are the things that this film really gets right from the beginning of the opening scene of the film is it doesn't labour backstory. We don't have this film suffering from the syndrome that those other franchise films do, which is trying to introduce all the backstory and the origin story, and then finally the film remembers about three quarters of the way through that, oh, there's a villain and we've forgotten about him or her. This film, it just has one scene where we have Star-Lord as a child, we have the death of his mother, and then he's taken up into a spaceship, and then we leap forward 30 years and he's a scavenger. And it's such a wonderful and really moving introduction to this film. And that's, look, I think the overriding experience that I had of this film and why I loved it is it is such a genuine film that look, halfway through, I felt like I was a 7-year-old watching Star Wars for the first time.
Right.
And I already had that sense of giddiness, that almost intangible quality of, I want to buy the, it works for merchandising, I want to buy the figurines, I want to wear the T-shirt, I want to put these posters up in my room, I want to listen to the soundtrack.
You'll believe a man can fly.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's something that I don't think Hollywood's managed to pull off too many times since the early Star Wars films and Indiana Jones. Those early Spielberg-Lucas collaborations sort of had that. And you nailed it before when you mentioned nostalgia. And this is a film that trades on nostalgia for people who had that experience as kids, but also I think it will produce that in children. And the script is clever because it targets adults, and there's throwaway jokes here. There's references to people like Jackson Pollock and all these sort of people who were famous and celebrities in the 70s and 80s. The soundtrack is 70s and 80s. But it also has the kind of the the colourfulness that'll appeal to children. Mm. One of the reasons for films like Avatar being such a success. And the other thing that I really loved about this film, and again, it's there in the script, is it's sentimental, but sentimental in a genuine way. So I was actually moved to tears
you
a couple of times in this film. I'm mad
Marvel
enough
film.
To admit this in a Marvel film. For the first time, it got me, pulled the heartstrings. But it also has the sense to pull back from the sentimentality at the right times and undercuts it with humour.
Yeah, right.
And the humour is really one of the things that I think distinguishes this film from probably all of the other Marvel films.
It's
even
the Marvel hallmark, though, isn't it? They're just the tone of the superhero movie. I mean, it's working for the market of one, i.e. me. I don't know. Clearly it's working for everyone else because they're coining it, aren't they?
Well, I think, you know how we talked about the Avengers and Joss Whedon, it had that trademark humour, and even with the more recent Captain America film, I think the humour is more in the foreground here than the action. So, I mean, those films had it in moments, but here it's playing to the strengths of this being a fun adventure, like a space adventure film. And look,
so
it's just
fun.
It just ticks all the boxes, and it's beautiful. The visual effects in this film are stunning. We talked last week about Hercules and how it didn't even get those right. This is a film, and I saw them on the same day, so it's probably an unfair comparison, but really, really extraordinary. I mean, moments where you can
see... Yeah, the trailer looks mind-blowing.
Where you just go, wow, visual effects have reached this point. That's incredible. I mean, how have they done that? But I guess when you've got $140 million, you'd
That's
hope
right.
that they'd be able to.
I'll tell you how they've done it. 3,000 people, 3 years in rooms full of computers.
17 minutes of credits listing people from those offices. Yeah, it looks such a wonderful film, and it is that childhood film, and I think it will appeal to broad audiences, and you don't need to have any experience of the Marvel films.
You don't need to know their backstories.
This is a film that will eventually tie into the Avengers story, the kind of build-up towards the battle with Thanos, but you know, you don't even need to know that. If you're a fan of Star Wars or sci-fi or adventure, you know, go and see it, and take the kids too. This is a film that is definitely family-friendly.
Okay, love a good family-friendly film. Karen Gillan, someone's texting in, was her performance good? What does she play?
She's one of the villainous roles. She's the blue, shaved-headed kind of warrior who's the adopted stepdaughter of Thanos, I think.
Okay, good.
Look, I think she's a little limited, but yeah, I think she's impressive.
Okay. And Thanos is someone famous, no?
It's going to be Josh Brolin in the upcoming... I think they're penning it for Avengers 3.
Right, okay.
So we've got James Spader as Ultron in the sequel coming up.
Okay. Look, I want to read... the texts are just flying in. I want to get to them, then I will get to your calls. 1300-222-774... The movies that made you feel young again. The Lord of the Rings trilogy took me back to my Star Wars childhood. I can very much relate to that. I remember seeing the first Lord of the Rings film and thinking, wow, I haven't felt like this since Star Wars. Although, I don't know that it works again when I've seen it, but still. Raph, I don't think anything could take me back to the feeling of watching Star Wars for the first time. Josh is really talking this film up. The trailer doesn't invite me. That's from Eddie. Raiders of the Lost Ark took me back to childhood. Rollicking good fun and exciting to boot. I like the fact we have kids who can see Batman and Superman movies with their grandparents who watched Batman and Superman movies when they were kids, indeed. Back to the Future, it took me back to my teenagerhood in the 50s. That's from Barb. I'm Kate from Elstonwick, and the Lego movie gave me such a good reminder of my kids' childhood. It was such a good time. 1300-222-774. Someone saying the very first Harry Potter movie was so imaginative, like Mary Poppins from my youth. Someone else saying Planet of the Apes, so I'm assuming that text, you are referring to one of the two recent films as the film that made you feel young. And the movie Brave, says this texter. I would have loved to have had the inspiration as a child that is Merida from Brave, the unconventional, willful and confident Scottish princess. And Raph, I recently watched The Big Steal. So sweet and funny how times have changed. The Big Steal,
Steve
Claudia
Bisley and Claudia Carvin.
Yeah, isn't it right? God, that's a long time
I think
ago.
That was a Nadia Tass, David Parker film. Guys who made Malcolm, which still holds up really well.
Yeah, okay. The Big Steal's not... I'm thinking of The Heartbreak Kid with Claudia Carvin and Alex Demetriou. Yeah, okay. I'm thinking of a totally different film. Other than the Lord of the Rings film, was there another that... You mentioned Lord of the Rings and Guardians of the Galaxy. Anything else that you can recall really gave you that young wanderlust?
Lego. That was the film I was going to come back to. And I actually, in my hyperbole, thanks, earlier in this year, I said there's no chance that there'll be any other film apart from Lego that will have so much fun in. Yeah, Guardians has taken it to a new level. And I think it may be the Chris Pratt factor.
Okay, you're just a sucker for him.
I think he's amazing. And if there's anyone out there who hasn't yet seen all of the Parks and Recreation seasons, I think it's time to get downloading it or buy it now. Get past the first season. The first season's not great.
Parks and Recreation.
From second season of Parks and Rec onwards, it's really one of the best sitcoms of the last 5 years.
Okay. A few texts asking for the name of the movie. I'll say it again, Guardians of the Galaxy, but really open a newspaper. you won't miss it. Superheroes film, Guardians of the Galaxy. This is not a one cinema film only. This is on every screen on the planet probably this weekend. Someone else texting, Donnie Darko takes me back to my childhood, riding through the hills, listening to Duran Duran and Echo and the Bunnymen. Loved it. And a lot of people are texting in about Expendables at even number 3, so go figure.
Which opens in, I think, 2 weeks. You wouldn't know it because I think Guardians may have stolen the limelight.
Yeah, can't wait. Isn't Expendables 3 where one of them injured themselves?
Oh, they both did. There's a great photo, you can Google it, of Schwarzenegger and Stallone side by side in their hospital
beds.
That's right.
Yeah. Oh, God, that's terrible. Look, while we're here, Josh and I have both seen a few film festival flicks. I've mentioned a few of them, and you've texted in before asking what they are. I'll get to them in a moment. But, Josh, things to keep your eye out for at the film festival?
So we had the opening last night. The opening night film was Predestination, which I think gets a general release in a few weeks'
time. Did you like that?
I think there's some interesting things to talk about. I might keep my cards close to my chest until it gets...
We had a chat to the directors yesterday, day before.
Yeah, they're quite affable, the Spearing Brothers. Yep. Look, so that the festival proper has begun this morning. I've seen a couple of documentaries. I'm doing a lot of documentaries so far. But one of the great ones that stood out, which does have another screening, is called Life Itself. And it's a documentary about the famous mainstream film critic Roger Ebert, who passed away earlier this year. Last year, I think.
Yep.
And it's from the director of Hoop Dreams, Steve James, like a really impressive documentarian. This felt like it may have been a fluff piece or a kind of a sycophantic sort of love affair with this guy. The fact that it was filmed in the 5 months leading up to his death, when he's in pretty bad shape, lent this film a really moving tone. I mean, Ebert actually says at one point, via a computer, because he has no jaw. I mean, he'd lost his jaw to mouth cancer years previously. He says, unless you film everything and I want this kind of warts and all reality, I don't want to be part of this documentary. And it really is quite moving. So it shifts from just sort of a personal portrait to something with a really broader significance or broader themes and quite a moving portrait.
So what are those broader themes? Are they about movies or about dying from cancer?
About death, but also cinema. So you get this sort of nostalgia and this sort of melancholy about the way in which cinemas change, the way in which criticisms change particularly. So there is a broader context, which I think is a really smart approach. Mm. Martin Scorsese was an executive producer on the film, and there's an interview with him about halfway through where he's talking about his time in the 1980s, where he was sort of coked off his head and about to really go down the void, and talked about how Siskel and Ebert presented him with an award in Toronto that really sort of lifted his spirits and sort of set him on the path again. And he chokes up. And I don't think I've ever seen Scorsese choke up in an interview. You know, he always presents that sort of fast-talking, energetic, affable, kind of loving filmmaker. And he really gets moved. And I think part of it is there's a really strong relationship that he had with Roger Ebert, which comes out
with
in the film
critic.
As well. Yeah. Right. And he talks about the pitfalls of that, because you see footage of Ebert taking him to task over Colour of Money. See sort of Scorsese feel like he's let down his daddy. You know, it's a wonderful sort
of... he let us all down with Colour of Money, didn't he?
Perhaps.
Okay. So that is called?
That's called Life Itself, and it's screening again on Tuesday at 6:30.
Okay. You need to tell us the film that made you feel like a child again. And yes, as Gandalf bestrode his horse and went into battle, I did feel like I was an 8-year-old or 7-year-old watching Star Wars again. So you can mention any film like that. There's one here. Oh, indeed. I like this one. I want to mention this before we get some traffic. Watching Where the Wild Things Are. It took me back to reading the book when I was young. It was such an amazing visual feast to a great story. And there is a Dave Eggers book that is a novel created after he wrote the script for the film, which is also beautiful and worth reading. I'll get to your texts and your calls. 1300 222 774. So the films that
you're listening to, Raphael Epstein.
Made you feel just like a child as I trample all over your precious eardrums. Let's go to Charlotte in Ripponlea. Hi, Charlotte.
Hi, Raph. It's about the time when that film Saving Mr. Banks came out.
Oh, yes.
They replayed Mary Poppins on TV.
Yes.
And I hadn't seen that since I was a little girl. And I just forgot how delightful it was and how amazing it was. So that made me feel very young again.
Oh, fantastic, Charlotte. Would you like to go to the film festival?
I would love to, please.
You are in, my friend. You are in. Andy has called from Mordialloc. Hi there, Andy.
Hey there, Raph. How are you?
What film made you feel young again?
Oddly enough, it was a science fiction film. It was Sunshine by Danny Boyle. I was so impressed by it. I had to watch the whole thing again with Danny Boyle's commentary over the back of it.
Okay, fantastic. Yeah, I think you are heading off to the film festival as well. Di's called from East Brighton. Hi, Di.
Yeah, hi, Raf. The film I loved was the new Star Wars.
Star Trek?
Star Trek. No, the new Star Trek, because my husband and I used to watch them for years and loved them.
Yes.
And it really took me right back, and then we introduced it to our daughter.
Well, there you go. And now that guy's making the new Star Trek films. The new Star Wars films, J.J. Abrams.
That's right. Oh, yeah, same one.
You stay on the line, Di. We'll head you off to the film festival as well. We have two more double passes to give away. We will give them away. I'm not sure if we'll get to the calls. But, Josh, you wanted to mention another film fest thing to keep your eye out on?
Two quick ones.
Yep.
I mentioned Scorsese before. Scorsese has a directing film in this festival. It's called The 50-Year Argument, and it's about a group of authors and their ongoing war with the New York Review of Books. And there are tickets. There are two screens.
What's the war about?
Well, I think because it was such a controversial publication in terms of its viewpoints affecting book sales and
okay. Is it about women not getting enough coverage? Or
I think it's part of it.
Issue?
I mean, it foregrounds authors. I mean, I haven't seen it yet, but it foregrounds authors like Gore Vidal and their kind of ongoing arguments with this publication.
Oh, fantastic. Okay.
So that's,
you know, it's got a circulation of about a third the Herald Sun. It doesn't actually have such a big circulation.
Oh,
anyway, there you
that's
go.
A shame. Maybe they'll talk about that.
Yeah, maybe.
It's screening tonight at 9 o'clock and on Sunday at 4 p.m., so that's the Scorsese one. It's only the second festival in the world, I think it's been shown at. So we're getting it pretty early, which is impressive.
Okay.
The other one, another filmmaker who has another film in the festival, but this is about two filmmakers. It's called Double Play, and it's a conversation between James Benning and Richard Linklater,
yes.
Apparently they're very divergent views about the filmmaking process, direction, and also a curious love of baseball. So I'm seeing that tonight. That's
all heady intellectuals in America have to have a love of baseball for some reason, which escapes me.
Well, so that's tonight at 9 o'clock and Sunday at 1:45.
The name again?
It's called Double Play.
Okay.
And Richard Linklater has Boyhood in the festival, which I believe you've seen, and I'm dying to see.
Look, I want to mention these only because I did a film preview the other day and a few people texted in. They wanted to know the films that are worth seeing. I would just heartily, heartily, heartily recommend. I'll reel them off. There's four of them. Boyhood is the Richard Linklater film. It's a marvelous creation. He's used the same group of actors over 12 years, a week or two each year for 12 years. It's a fictional story, but you watch these people grow old. It's about a boy. You'll hear from the actor who plays the boy. Ethan Hawke is the dad. Patricia Arquette is the mum. It is fantastic. That's coming out in general release soon. Predestination, which Josh and I, we will talk about Predestination in future weeks. It's another Ethan Hawke one made in Melbourne. Definitely worth seeing. That too is coming out at the end of August. Felony is the Joel Edgerton film. He wrote the script for that while he was acting in Zero Dark Thirty.
This is directed by Matthew Saville.
Yep. Fantastic. Just loved, loved, loved it. You'll hear from one of the actors in that, Tom Wilkinson, who's the everyman of film. He's kind of done absolutely everything. So I've mentioned Boyhood. These are all coming out on general release. Predestination. Felony is written by Joel Edgerton, the great Australian actor. The other really great film, and we should be chatting to the director of it, Tony Ayres, next week, is Cut Snake. Is it Stephen Stapleton from the 300 sequel? It is Stephen Stapleton.
Yes.
Pretty sure that's his name.
I'm dying to see that.
It's extraordinary. Cut Snake is fantastic. So if you want to see great Aussie film, they're all coming out. Look, it's difficult because we get access to the people in them during the film festival, and I know the tickets go fast, but Predestination, Felony, and Cut Snake, go and see any of them. They're great, and you'll hear from people involved in those films, or you've already heard from the Predestination directors. Read out a few texts. Sorry, Sullivan Stapleton is the actor's name. He was in the 300 sequel. He is in Cut Snake. Oh, it's so good. I just want to read this from Brandon Eltham. E.T., the scene where the kids ride off into the skies with the moon in the background made me feel like the prepubescent me, riding through the streets of Kew in the late 60s. That sense of freedom. Josh, thanks for coming in.
Pleasure.
Josh's thoughts and marvellous discussions at filmology.com. That's spelt with a P-H.